Thanks, Owen. Today I'm joined by a woman whose story has shaken many assumptions about faith, obedience and the hidden inner workings of one of the Catholic Church's most secretive branches. Anne-Marie Allen was just 15 when she was recruited under the guise of a catering course, a course that led not to a kitchen but to 7 years of control, servitude and deeply entrenched psychological and physical suffering within Ireland's Opus Dei. Now at 62, Anne-Marie is speaking out not only for herself but for countless others who remain silent. Her memoir, Serve, My Lost Years at the Heart of Ireland's Opus Dei, lays bare an alleged disturbing world of mortification, manipulation and a deeply gendered form of religious coercion. Anne-Marie joins me now. Anne-Marie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Anne-Marie, look, I suppose just for context, looking back to that first meeting in Cork when you were 15, what strikes you now about how you and your family were approached?
I think we were approached by people in this organisation, you know, that were very well presented, that knew exactly what they were doing. You know, they were we were made promises of, you know, attending a good course that would give me a good job at the end of the day and good qualifications. And you know, we were given promises. I think my parents were told that I would be safe and that I would be well looked after. You know, and it seemed really, really good. And you know, that's not what it turned out to be.
Tell me more about what it turned out to be. Do you think Opus Dei deliberately targeted young women from modest homes, those unlikely to question authority?
Oh, absolutely. I think on most of their activities, they're looking for people that will join Opus Dei as celibate members. I think that's their primary target, really. And I think in these catering courses, young girls that were impressionable, maybe that were idealistic, good workers. That was a prerequisite. You know, that we were targeted to be recruited as assistant numeraries, this lower grade in the in Opus Dei. And those assistant numeraries, what they do is they provide free domestic service to all centres of Opus Dei in the form of catering, laundry, hospitality, and so on. And we were told I had a vocation as an assistant numerary, and I had a vocation as big as a house.
Okay, look, take me back a little bit again. So initially you thought you were enrolling in a catering course. Was it years later that you were then put to, I suppose, domestic chores?
No, I think the recruitment started the first evening that we were there. I think if you read the book Serve, I think that first night is described really, really well. That night, our parents had just gone out the gate. All of us had been delivered there or left there in the hands of the Opus Dei members. And that night, the recruitment started. You know, they started to tell us about Opus Dei, the founder, what it was about. We were looking at these lovely ladies. They were so well presented, so well educated and so happy, you know, the recruitment started then, you know. So it was only a matter of months, really, from that time until I actually joined as an assistant numerary.
And how did that appointment to domestic chores and an assistant numerary, how did that play out? What did that look like on a day-to-day basis?
What was expected of an assistant numerary and of me was that, you know, you were called at 6:30 in the morning, you did, you went to prayer and you started work at about 8 o'clock. Or you were brought to a place to work, and you worked in a centre of Opus Dei all day, and you got home maybe at 9 o'clock, 9:30, where there was a get together, and you went to bed, and that was 7 days a week. During that day, you did what they call the religious norms of Opus Dei, were to the prayers, mass, rosary, and so on. But you know, it was, and there were silent periods as well in the afternoon, in the morning, at night time, and it was. It was like 7 days a week, no time off, no rest time. you know, you were under supervision all the time, and you were to be obedient to the directrices of Opus Dei and to serve them. You know, that's why the word serve is in the title. You know, it was all about service and servitude.
And this was in the 1970s. Are you aware of many other people in Ireland who, I suppose, have had the same lived experience as you? I know numbers of the amount of Opus Dei members in Ireland are hard to pin down. Are you in contact with anyone who has since left like yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I've come in contact with a number of other former assistant numeraries. Once you leave Opus Dei, you know, I think it has to be said, you know, you're not mentioned when you leave. Once you leave, you're basically told, you're treated as if you're dead, as if you don't exist. So the existing members, you can't get back in contact with them. You're told not to. And I was told not to. So when other people left, I never knew that. So we started to find each other within the last few years, and there's a few of us of Irish assistant numeraries, and it's been, I suppose, a magnificent experience to meet these people and to see how they have survived, really, and how they've coped from their trauma, but also how they've thrived, and how they've overcome the trauma that they've experienced. Yeah.
Look, I think what stands out to me is that there does seem to be a deeply gendered element here: domestic labour, surveillance, obedience. Do you feel this was also about controlling women's bodies and futures at the time?
Oh God, yeah, 150%, yeah, 100%, yeah. It was about controlling women. Yeah, we were there for domestic servitude, and that was our role for our lives, our celibate lives. So yeah, that's 100% correct.
Can you tell me a little bit about self-mortification and self-flagellation? I know that was part of your time with Opus Dei. What did that look like?
Okay, that is a part of what they call the norms in Opus Dei, and it's the use of, mortification encompassed a load of different things on a daily basis, but two of the main things that are, you know, wearing the chain and using a whip on a Saturday. So you wore the chain for 2 hours a day. It's kind of a load of links with the barbs turned in, and you tie it onto your leg for 2 hours a day, and then you had a whip that you hit yourself with on the back area every Saturday, and sometimes could be increased depending on what you were told. You know, you might be directed to do it more if you were doubting your vocation or having particular thoughts or whatever. But mortification was an integral part of being a member of Opus Dei. You know, it also involved sleeping on the floor and sleeping without a pillow, and that kind of thing. You know, and you had to report back and tell them when you had it done, and so on. Yeah, but it was to mortify your body. The founder very much believed in this. I see it as a form of self-harm. So very destructive indeed, yes.
And tell me, that mortification, that element of mortification, did that start while you were a teenager?
Oh God, yeah, I was 16 years of age.
And that was encouraged?
No, it wasn't encouraged. I was told to do it.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, you... Yeah, I mean, that's difficult. You mentioned love bombing in your book. And you also mentioned as well that, and you mentioned it there as well, that often you, I suppose, the concept of morality, sin, obedience, worth, I imagine that got reshaped while you were inside. I did hear mention that you were at a sports game and you got a little bit enthusiastic and you were reprimanded for that. Can you tell me what happened there?
Well, I was actually watching a match, which was actually in itself unusual that we were allowed to do this, because television was severely restricted. It was seen as a source of immorality. But anyway, one day we were allowed to watch a match and Cork were playing, and I was shouting at the television, and I was using some unparliamentary language, and I got a thing called a severe fraternal correction afterwards, that I had behaved like that I hadn't behaved like a saint, that I had behaved like an animal, and that I wasn't to do it again. And you couldn't say, look, that's ridiculous, you know. So you just had to say thank you, you know. So it was this type of behaviour control that was doled out every day. You never knew when it was coming, and it could be for something minor, or it could be for something perceived as more serious, you know. You never knew when they were coming, and you were always on high alert, you know.
And look, Opus Dei have said that there are significant discrepancies between your account and those of other members. What would you say to that response?
Well, what I would say is that there's a website called opusdeibros.org, and it's a Spanish website. And my testimony will match with many of the thousands and thousands of testimonies on that website. I'm not surprised at Opus Dei's response, but that's their standard response to any allegations, you know. So, but I think that my testimony will match with many of the testimonies on opusdeibros.org, and it's my truth. You know, I lived it and I'll stand over it.
They've extended an invitation for reconciliation. Is that something you'd ever consider?
Absolutely not. No, I won't, no.
And what would justice look like for you?
I think what justice would look like for me would be that the thousands of women like myself who left Opus Dei with only the clothes on their back, you know, without pension payments or only part pension payments made, you know, left without money or savings or qualifications, that in some way that they would be compensated. You know, many women like me suffered greatly when they left. Some left after 2 years, some left after, I know people that left after 32, 42 years, you know, with nothing. So I think that those people in particular need to be compensated for the time that they gave to Opus Dei, and that their lives should be made comfortable from after Opus Dei.
And I suppose, just to summarise, Anne-Marie, what would you say now to a 15-year-old girl being drawn into something that looks safe and godly on the outside but demands silence and submission?
I would say run the other way and go home to your parents as quickly as possible.
Okay, that was Anne-Marie Allen discussing her experience and time with Opus Dei. KFM has reached out to Opus Dei for a statement, but on their website they issued a statement to national media. It states, quote, "We remain greatly saddened to again read Anne-Marie's account of her experience with us over 40 years ago. Given the passage of time and absence of historical records, it is extremely difficult to adequately respond to all the serious and upsetting allegations Anne-Marie makes. Many of these genuinely do not accord with those of long-standing members who were part of Opus Dei alongside Anne-Marie. Nonetheless, it is clear that Anne-Marie has been deeply affected, which she attributes to her time with us, and for that we are profoundly sorry. Quote, "We have repeatedly publicly said that we want to listen and learn from individuals' testimonies. It is fair to say that as a result, some practices and approaches within Opus Dei have changed over the years as society itself has changed." He went on to say, however, Opus Dei's ethos is unchanged and has always been to do good and to imitate Jesus Christ in our daily lives. Nothing could be further from our intentions than to cause harm to anyone, irrespective of whether they are or have been members. That said, criticism from former members has prompted institutional reflection, leading to safeguarding improvements and changes in the way we do things. We have listened and are learning. Nonetheless, to portray Opus Dei as an organisation with malign intent could not be further from the truth. We remain open to discussing these matters directly with Anne-Marie, should she wish to do so. Anne-Marie, thanks so much for your time. We'll be back after this.